At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Saturday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new content, podcasts, articles, polls, everything on the fantasy baseball side. You can check it out over there. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, please do go to sportsethos.com and you can check out all of our offerings across the various sports. We have DFS, we have gambling, team coverage that's not related to fantasy. There's a lot of stuff for you guys to be checking out. That's sportsethos.com. Guys, we're going to be talking about a bit of news today. I think you know what I'm probably going to be leading off with if you've been following the news cycle today. And we're going to talk about a couple things that have popped up throughout the early hours of Saturday. And then we're going to talk about Friday's slate and go through my quick hits. But of course, the big news of the day, I don't think it's a massive shocker for anybody, but Spencer Strider underwent not actually Tommy John surgery. It was an interior brace procedure on his right elbow, or internal interior brace, one of those things. It's not quite Tommy John surgery. It's fairly similar from, and again, I am very, very far from a doctor, but from what I understand, it's kind of like semi-Tommy John surgery. You're still repairing the ligament, but without the same invasiveness, from what I understand. Again, you do your own research on Tommy John surgery and UCL stuff, because I'm going to probably steer you wrong on the medical side of things. But from what I have been made to understand, reading a lot of the different reports and articles this morning, it's actually kind of decent news. And I know, it's like, trust me, I have Spencer Strider on four of my 14 teams. Three of those teams are draft and holds where I will not even be able to replace him. So I am feeling the pain of this as much as you guys, probably more than some of you, just because I know a lot of you guys are probably one or two league guys. If you have Strider in your one league, that's brutal. Having him in leagues where you can't replace him is just absolutely disgusting. In the first round, like, it's going to be very hard to compete in those leagues, especially because if you took Strider in the first, the odds are you probably waited on pitching for a few rounds. You figured you had your ace secured. You probably went 3-4 bats after Strider. So it's really ugly stuff. But the good news that I alluded to is that this is probably not going to keep him out as long as you would have expected. He might be back early next season. The timeline is 12 to 14 months, so let's even just say it's 14 months. We're probably getting Strider back somewhere next June. If it was full-blown Tommy John surgery, then we would have wiped out all of next year as well, because that recovery is about 18 months. Sometimes it's a little bit shorter, and again, like, it's everything is always advancing, and they're cutting down timelines by, you know, weeks, months, whatever, but it's still generally 16, 18 months you're going to miss when you have Tommy John surgery. The fact that they went for the alternative procedure means that we're going to get Strider back earlier than we had anticipated. So the question isn't now about what you do with Strider for this year, because he's clearly done for the year. He's not pitching again in 2024, as awful as that is to say. But now the question is, where is he going to be drafted in 2025? I think I'm going to put a poll up on Twitter and just see what people are generally thinking there. Because if you know that you're getting 4 months of Spencer Strider, that's better than 6 months of most pitchers. Now, you also have to factor in what he'll look like off of an elbow procedure and not his first one. Because when he was at Clemson, he had Tommy John surgery. So this is a couple of procedures already now for Spencer Strider, who is 27, 20, he's 25. Holy shit, I thought Spencer Strider was 27. He's 25. So I don't even know what his future is going to look like necessarily. He's still really young, but off a couple of elbow procedures, I don't know. That being said, there is usually like a grace period when you're coming off of the surgery, specifically Tommy John elbow-related stuff. And I think it's specifically Tommy John surgery, but I think this would probably fall into the same classification as well, that you're generally pretty good to go for the first few hundred innings after you have that procedure. Look at what happened with Justin Verlander a couple of years ago. He had one of the best seasons of the 21st century, sub-2 ERA, won the Cy Young World Series. It was an incredible year that he did after missing a season. He actually missed like 18 months, I think. But that's, you know, I don't want to get into the specifics of 18 months, 16 months, 14 months. Like, that's something that's really more suited for the medical community because, I don't really know. But this is generally as positive as we maybe could have had it in terms of this surgery happening. It's the better surgery. It's not something that is going to cost him two full seasons. It's going to cost him one full season, which, again, it's not good. But I'm very interested to see if people are going to be taking shots on Spencer Strider within the top 100 picks next year. I don't expect it, but let's say that the offseason's going fairly well and they think, yeah, Strider's going to be back sometime mid, late May. I mean, if you're missing 6 weeks of Strider and you get, like, what is 6 weeks? You're missing, like, let's call it 8 to 10 starts and you're still getting 20 Spencer Strider starts. I mean, that's what he did a couple of seasons ago, right? That's what he did in 2022. He started 20 games, 131 innings. And he struck out 202 batters, 267 ERA, sub-1 whip. So you can make the argument that even if you are missing 2 months of Spencer Strider, he should be in your consideration like in the 50 to 100 range. It's way too soon because we don't know how the recovery is going to go. Maybe he beats the timeline. Maybe he gets pushed back. But I think it's an interesting question, and it's something that we're definitely going to be talking about a lot throughout draft season of where is Spencer Strider going to go? Where is he going to go? People are going to stash him, and it's going to be a thing. It's definitely going to be a thing, and I'm very interested to see where the market settles in as of right now. I have no idea. Like, if I'm in a draft for 2025 right now and Spencer Strider's sitting there at pick 100, it would be kind of tempting. But at the same time, it's like, oh my God. Like, with all this, with all the injuries popping up, do I really want to take a guy who has already, you know, undergone a couple of procedures? It's a very tricky question that I don't know the answer to at this point in time. The whole arm question is something that I really don't even know how to address. I was watching an interview that a couple of the Blue Jays Central reporters, the guys, I'm in Toronto for those of you who don't, I think most of you probably know by now, but the Blue Jays Central program, which airs before Blue Jays games, it's on the network Rogers Sportsnet, which, you know, broadcasts all the Blue Jays games, and they actually own the team. They had Dr. James Andrews on this week, the guy who's performed, I don't know how many Tommy John surgeries, one of the more famous sports doctors in history. And he's talking about how this goes all the way back to youth baseball and people throwing curveballs and 90-mile-an-hour fastballs when they're 15. I don't really know that that's ever going to stop, and this pitching problem might just be something that keeps popping up and popping up. But if you can find that interview online, you can find it, I think, on their podcast feed as well. Blair and Barker would be the podcast. I would recommend listening to that interview because he's somebody who knows about these things incredibly well. And he's kind of worried about the state of baseball. And this is something that we're going to have to probably deal with a lot more going forward, especially with these guys who throw very fast. Spencer Strider is the most recent casualty. But like I saw the other day, Mason Miller hit 103.9 or something. Everybody's like, yes, he's getting the velocity up there. He's throwing 104. It's like, for me, it's like, oh, my God. When are we going to get the tweet saying he's going to have surgery? I think the velocity is a big problem. But it's also not something we can actually fix because if guys aren't throwing fast, they're not going to get scholarships, they're not going to get drafted, et cetera, et cetera. It's a huge, huge problem for baseball that we're definitely not going to be able to solve today. But Spencer Strider, unfortunately, got to send him back to the waiver wire. Carlos Correa landed on the IL with an oblique strain. This is the next thing we're going to talk about. He's been doing very well, Carlos Correa, this season, surprisingly so, probably for a lot of people who maybe don't have any shares. I think a lot of people probably don't have any shares because they were just kind of sick of him at this point. But through the first 11 games, he's hit a home run, 4 ribbies, 5 runs scored. He's batting .306. He has 8 walks compared to 9 strikeouts. It's looked very, very good for Carlos Correa so far. There will be people who drop him after this. I wouldn't be doing it. I'm just going to take a look and see how many people on Yahoo cut bait today. I'm guessing it's a decent chunk. 2,000, more than, actually 2,100 teams have cut bait on Correa. Gone from 72 down to 69%. I think it's a little premature. I don't think he's going to be a league winner or anything, but a very, very solid shortstop. If you're able to get him and you were, if you're drafting him, if you have Carlos Correa, you probably got him in like the last couple of rounds. It doesn't hurt to be cutting him. And if you're able to get, I don't know, if you're finding Jared Jones on a waiver wire or Garrett Crochet or somebody like that, you know, Brett Beatty, even, who we'll talk about later, like, sure, I can understand making the switch, but he's looked pretty good. That batting average was always a really, you know, big part of his fantasy game that he did not have last year. It was a bad season in that regard, but I think we all kind of generally agree he's not as bad as he was last year. And I'm not saying that you have to hold Correa if you're in a 10-team league. You probably don't have to, but if you have IL space, I would just put him on the IL for now. I wouldn't be rushing to cut him because he's actually looked pretty good so far this year. He made a diving play, and, you know, it's not something that I expect to be terribly serious. The oblique, sometimes you see oblique strains that are like a couple months, but this is something that I, from what I've read, they don't expect him to miss more than at most a couple of weeks. So I wouldn't be rushing to drop him, especially if you have IL spots. I think it does make a lot of sense to hold on to Carlos Correa for now. There's no need to be rushing and getting rid of him. I know there's FAB this Sunday for NFBC players, you know, especially in 15-teamers. There's really not a hell of a lot else out there. Somebody who was batting over 300 so far, somebody that you got at a nice draft day discount. I don't see any real need to be panicking and getting rid of him. But I understand at the same time, if you're in a 10-team league and there's great free agents available, if you want to be cutting him, but I don't think you need to. There's a lot of injuries this time of year where you see somebody gets hurt and it's like, ah, okay, you know what? They weren't great anyway. Forget about them. I don't think Carlos Correa is in that category, though, at this point. I think he's elevated, not into the circle of trust, but closer to where he was in his Houston days as opposed to what we saw from him last year. Let's talk about yesterday's quick hits. Let's go through the slate, and we'll start off with one that was absolutely painful to watch as a Blue Jays fan and as a Kevin Gausman, you know, lover. I'm obsessed with Gausman. Even going back to his San Francisco days, I've had a lot of people call me a homer, a Toronto homer, because of how much I love Gausman. I mean, I've loved him in San Francisco. You can find those tapes if you go back a couple of years on the podcast. I'm not going to dig them up, but I've loved Gausman for a long, long time. This has been very tough to watch so far. So last week against the Yankees, did not have his best stuff. He was actually, and it's been attributed to the cold, and I think that's probably what it was, but Kevin Gausman was throwing like some pitches in the mid-80s, fastballs in the mid-80s against the Yankees. Lasted an inning and a third. He gave up, what was it, six runs against the Yankees, I think. And then, honestly, it's hard to keep track because he gave up six runs yesterday as well against the Colorado Rockies. They were getting to him. 3 2/3, 10 hits, 6 earned. He struck out 4, did not walk a batter. And the weird thing is he was actually missing a lot of bats. He had 18 whiffs, 37% CSW. But that's the thing. Like, it was either a whiff, like they were either swinging and missing, or they were making solid contact. You had Ryan McMahon, and it was kind of just one of those days for the Rockies. Ryan McMahon, who is unconscious right now, he had a splitter that was like, I don't know, roughly around his shins, into right field for a double. Chris Bryant was getting hits off of him, and Chris Bryant has been, you know, awful to start the year, and Chris Bryant put a ball deep into the gap against him. Like, everybody was just seeing Gausman really well yesterday. So it's not great. It's certainly not great if you drafted Kevin Gausman and you're now sitting on an 11.57 ERA and a 1.93 whip through the first 9 1/3 innings. My Tout Wars team has Hunter Brown and Kevin Gausman. My ERA was 3.4 or something before their starts this week. And I had like, I think I was third in ERA in the league. It's a roto league. And then now I'm like 12th in the league. And my ERA went up by more than a run. I only have 3 points in that category now. They have done some damage, specifically both of those guys. I mean, there's other factors, but those two guys have been just brutal. I am a bit worried about Gausman. I am not entering into panic mode, however. He didn't have any time to really ramp up in spring because of the shoulder fatigue that he was dealing with, which, again, can also be something that we look at as a bit of a concern going forward, but not an injury, not something to be overly concerned about. The way I'm looking at this with Kevin Gausman is that this was his third start. He had the one abbreviated start in spring. So in terms of where his body clock is right now, we're talking about a guy who, you know, usually at this point he's thrown 3 starts, 4 starts. We're talking about 12 innings or so. You're usually mid-March at that point, you know, early to mid-March, where your arm generally is starting to just get used to batters again, get used to getting the velocity and being in the routine of pitching every 5 days. Gausman didn't really have that ramp up this spring because of the shoulder fatigue. People are literally cutting Kevin Gausman today, and I don't think it's a lot of people, and a lot of smart people probably aren't, but more than 500 leagues on Yahoo already cut bait with Kevin Gausman today. He was a Cy Young finalist last year. You know, when you look at all the factors the ramp up, specifically the cold weather in New York last week, I'm not going to be overly concerned, and I think that he's generally a buy. Like, I wouldn't be like throwing everything at him and trying to get him in every league, but if people are selling Kevin Gausman for like a seventh or eighth round value, then I would be jumping on it. You paid a third round price, maybe even a second round price to get Kevin Gausman, depending on your league. Maybe it was a fourth, but anywhere in that range, second to fourth round is where he was generally going. If you're getting him for a few rounds discounted, I'd be taking it. On the other side, I would not be the one offering up those deals, Kevin Gausman for, you know, somebody that you were taking around pick 100 or something. Like, that's not what I would be doing. It's way too soon to be panicking on Gausman, especially considering the velo got back up into the generally normal range last night, 94, 95, generally with his fastball. I think he was sitting about 94-ish. So, especially after what we saw last week, I'm really not too concerned about Gausman. Considering the velocity's back, you know, the BABIP luck is always something that is going to be a factor with him. He caused himself some problems last night. The way his pitches were going through the zone, he was missing his spots a little bit. So my worry level is not zero, but I'm definitely not in panic mode either with Kevin Gausman. Let's talk Christopher Sanchez. Really good start. Got back on track against the Pirates. He went six innings, allowed one earned run, struck out six, and allowed four hits and three walks. 30% CSW. He went down to 65% on Yahoo over the week because people were concerned about his bad outing that he had. Like, this is the time of year when everybody's just overreacting so much. He had a really good start against Cincy, bad start against Washington, and then people just flooded to drop him. In fact, he went from 65 when I wrote my notes last night to 64%. People are continuing to drop Christopher Sanchez even after a good start. I would absolutely be adding him if you have the opportunity to. I mean, he's going to stick in that Phillies rotation, I believe, the whole year. I think the stuff is really good. And something that has worried me a little bit so far are the free passes he's been handing out, seven walks and 15 and a third innings. He had a 4% walk rate last year. Not that I expect that to stick, but he's shown that he does have that command at the major league level. It's not going to be 4%, but it's also not going to be, you know, over 10% kind of range. It's going to probably be like a 6 or 7% walk rate. And I do think that Sanchez will get stronger as the year goes on. He's really not somebody that I am worrying about in the long term at all. If you're seeing him get dropped, I would be picking him up. There's definitely a worse pitcher on your roster right now in most leagues than Christopher Sanchez. Maybe not if you're in like an 8-team league. I think most of the 10 teams and above are going to be able to find a spot for Christopher Sanchez if you look hard enough. Let's talk about Brett Beatty. He's breaking out. He is appears to be breaking out right in front of us. He's batting 327. He went 2-for-4 yesterday, drove in a couple runs, and he's moved up the batting order already. He was bottom of the order, 7-8, earlier on, and now he's like the 4-5 guy pretty consistently, playing nearly every day, and he is still widely available. Like, this is one where there is a definite market discrepancy between the performance and the availability on Yahoo. He's batting 327. He's driven in 8 runs. He's got the homer. He's only 19% rostered. Why? I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. This is a must-roster player in my eyes in every league, 10 team and above. He only went up from 17% last night. Like, it's only a 2% increase. I think it should be a lot more. He is definitely somebody to be taking a look at if you're finding him on waivers. Another guy who appears to be really breaking out is Ezekiel Tovar. This is one of my preseason predictions. Actually, this goes back to the end of 2023 when I kind of said I was thinking Ezekiel Tovar could return a top 25 value. I did tweet it out. I retweeted it last night, which I know is kind of probably a mistake. And as soon as I tweeted, I'm like, I'm taking a bit of a victory lap here. It's probably not going to look well because it's, you know, April the 12th. It's probably not going to go well, but he's been incredible. Batting 346, 3 homers and a couple steals. He's already made his way up to the leadoff spot. It only took him about a week to get there. He's gone in competitive leagues. If your league is even somewhat competitive, then you are not finding Ezekiel Tovar. But 80% means that there are 20% of leagues out there, whether they're competitive or, you know, maybe people use real drafts as like a mock draft and they're not playing out the league or whatever. Like, there might be some percentage of that where you're never going to make it up. You're never going to get to 100. But Ezekiel Tovar should be over 90. The fact that he's at 80, I think, is a little bit ridiculous. Half your games in Coors is just a bonus, but he's shown it over the last week that he doesn't need to be at Coors, especially last night. And, you know, he's shown it earlier in the year in Chicago as well. He hit a home run in Arizona earlier this year. It's not just a Coors thing. He can be a valuable player wherever he is, and you should be adding him if you're able to find him anywhere. Let's talk Max Fried. Got back on track in a big way against the Marlins. 6 1/3, allowed 4 hits and 1 earned run. Struck out 4 and walked a singular batter with a 29% CSW. There was never really any reason to be that concerned about Max Fried. But, I mean, this is the time of year when we're panicking and we know that there's a history of forearm issues and every other pitcher is getting hurt. So it's easy to make the connection of, well, there's something wrong with Fried. He's probably hurt. But he seems to be okay. He really got back on track last night. I think the buy low window has probably slammed shut. There was about a week there where you could probably get Max Fried at a pretty nice little discount. I think after last night, it's going to be very hard to be doing that. Maybe you still find some worried people. And again, this is the great thing about people who don't pay as close attention to it. You guys who are listening, you listen to a fantasy baseball podcast, you're likely very in tune with what's going on. That doesn't mean that the whole league that you play in is. They might still be looking at the stat line a little too closely and seeing that Max Fried has an 874 ERA and a 185 whip. And they might see that he's the 820th ranked player, according to Yahoo, on the season. So there might still be a buying opportunity, depending on your league. I would try, if you can. I think that Max Fried, especially right now, should be somebody that you're interested in. Not to say that you throw everything at him, because, again, there is the underlying forearm issues that he's had, and those generally do recur at some point. But I think Max Fried, for now, seems pretty safe in the current landscape. He's not somebody I'd be worried about really one way or the other. I mentioned him earlier, but Ryan McMahon has been like holy shit level of hot to start the season. I talked about him in the preseason as somebody that I liked because he's very consistent. You know what you're going to get out of him. But he's been beyond just consistent. He's been a superstar. He's been a top 40 fantasy player, batting .415. He's hit a couple of homers, 11 ribbies, and 7 runs scored. He's been fantastic. I think that Ryan McMahon should have been rostered before the season. And if you go listen to our second base, third base previews, I was saying the same things. This is not being a prisoner of the moment. But now that he started off very hot, and you're still seeing him on waiver wire, 77%, he needs to be added. And whether it's to be on your team or not, and again, I've mentioned this a few times, the whole picking a guy up off waivers and putting him in a trade, it doesn't usually go terribly well. But McMahon might be one of those exceptions this time of year where, you know, there's a track record of decent fantasy success. We're not talking about a top 100 player, but a very productive fantasy player who's off to this incredible start. Second and third eligibility is massive because not only can you play him at second or third, but then you can play him in the corner or the middle infield spots to go along with utility. You have 5 options of where to put Ryan McMahon in your lineup. The versatility is massive. And that, you know, these are the same things we were saying before the year, but now he's off to this incredible start. So you're either picking him up and riding it out, which I think is something that is very viable, or you can try and, you know, eke out some value. And the thing with buy low and sell high is they get misused a lot. I think they get conflated. Buy low, people think buy dirt cheap, or sell high means sell for a first rounder. Just about little bits of value this time of year. Is Ryan McMahon going to hit .415 all season long? We already know the answer to this. I don't even need to tell you. It's going to be probably in the .250 to .270 range. But you might be able to capitalize on that, whether it's through getting those stats for this hot streak on your line, on your rosters right now and getting those stats accumulated, or whether it's through flipping him potentially and getting somebody that's a few rounds more valuable. This is the thing. You got to be smart with your trades. You can't just be, you know, seeing, I don't know, who's a hot player. Take any hot player in the league right now, any top 10 player who's like, you know, not a realistic top 10 player. Let's say Spencer Steer. And you're trying to trade him for a first-round player because, well, Spencer Steer's the 8th-ranked player right now. You're not going to get very far with those type of trades. But if you're trying to trade Spencer Steer, who was, you know, about the 100th pick roughly by ADP, and you're trying to get, like, the 70th player by ADP roughly, I think that makes a lot more sense. It's not egregious. People are going to be more likely to accept it, and you're still getting value out of it, when really there shouldn't be any massive changes in your player evaluations based on what we've seen so far this year. There's small things. You know, Jared Jones can obviously get moved up your rankings. Esteri Ruiz can obviously go down your rankings. So not to say that we don't do anything, but you shouldn't be drastically changing how you're valuing players from how we did 2 weeks ago, because there really hasn't been anything that's changed that much. If you can get little bits of value here and there with a McMahon, with a Steer, with a Ronel Blanco, or any of those types who are probably overperforming a little bit, it does make sense. And in my opinion, I think it does make sense. Let's talk about Andrew Abbott, who I mistakenly referred to as Andre Abbott in my recap. I left out the W. Apologies, Andrew. He's done very well this season. I picked him up in a couple of Fab Leagues last year, and I was more or less happy with the results. I wasn't very interested this year, just kind of worried about people maybe overpaying a little bit. Not that he was terribly expensive, but the fact that he starts half his games at one of the most, if not the most, pitcher-friendly park in baseball kind of had me staying away from Andrew Abbott a little bit. In each of his first three starts, he's gone at least five innings, allowed fewer than two earned runs in each of them. I mean, the competition has been fairly weak. Don't get me wrong. Last night, it was the White Sox. Before that, it was the struggling Mets. The first start of the year was against the Phillies, who also have been struggling. They're, you know, more talented team. But this is something that I think is kind of interesting with Andrew Abbott, right? We're talking about two away starts, one home start. I'm not saying that he's a must roster player. He's not. But I think that he is a very interesting candidate to stream in away games. And certain matchups at home. Like next week, he gets the Angels at home. That's one where the Angels are doing kind of well. I might throw him out there because they're still like not a great team. We're seeing people say like the Angels are legitimately good this year already. I think it's hilarious. It's going to be the same shit that we see every single year. You can probably start him against the Angels. You can probably start him in most opportunities away from home. He's not somebody to be running and adding. But I think given the right matchup, Andrew Abbott will make for a very, very interesting streamer this season. 45% rostered on Yahoo. I mean, that's a pretty low number. Generally speaking, I don't expect it to shoot up unless he throws like a, you know, complete game shutout his next game. It's probably not going to jump drastically one way or another. I think he's an interesting low-key guy to keep in mind for streaming, because I think that is probably where he is best suited in most cases. 15-team leagues, you're probably starting him most cases. 12 and below, I think he is firmly in the streamer realm at this point. Let's talk about Jose Leclerc. Ugly stuff, man. He pitched the sixth inning in a game yesterday that the Rangers were leading by nine. There was a quote from the manager after the game that they want to give him low leverage situations to build his confidence back up. Whatever it is, Jose Leclerc can be safely dropped from pretty much every single roster. I got back and forth with somebody yesterday who said we shouldn't drop Leclerc. I wouldn't rush to that judgment. He's going to get his head right. He might get the opportunity back. Here's the thing with Leclerc. He might get the opportunity back. He's not somebody who is so great. He's so unimpeachable when he has the role. So maybe he does get it back, but we're not talking about massive strikeouts. We're not talking about somebody who I expect to be a great ratio guy. He was a 2.68 ERA last year, which was generally accepted as an overperformance. He was really good in the playoffs. But just generally speaking, like Leclerc might get the role back, and maybe that happens in a couple weeks or so. I just don't think the skills are that great to hold through this potential nightmare that we're entering into, especially because they have David Robertson and they have Kirby Yates. Both of them have closing experience. It seems like Kirby Yates is the guy, based on their bullpen usage, that will get that crack the next time there's a save chance. But I think this is going to be a headache overall. I think, you know, Leclerc is out for now. It'll probably be Yates, but maybe they go to Robertson next week. And then maybe it's Leclerc again. He gains some trust and he loses it again. We go to Kirby Yates and then it's Robertson. It's like, is this something that's really worth bothering if we're going to be splitting up 35 saves three different ways, even if it's 45 saves three different ways? I don't think that's really that valuable unless somebody does take over the role and takes over the role consistently enough where we know we can slot a guy into our weekly lineups and not have to worry about, oh my God, he didn't get the save this week. I put Yates in and Robertson gets two saves. So next week I'll put in Robertson and then it'll be Yates getting a save and a win. And it's just a headache that I think that you should be avoiding wherever possible. It's probably going to be Kirby, but I really can't say with any degree of certainty what they're going to do a week or 2 weeks from now. It's a situation that I am generally avoiding if possible. You might have lost Leclerc and you might need to replace him. At this point, I would be not really aiming to replace him with guys who are on the Rangers at this point. I just don't think there's really that much value there. If you need a closer, I mean, Michael Kopech is still available in a decent number of leagues, 37% rostered. He seems to have the job in Chicago. The skills, I think, are probably a little bit better than Leclerc. There's some whip risk, but I think the strikeouts are going to be a lot better. He's a lot more available, and he has the role a lot more solidified. So if you can make that swap, Michael Kopech for Jose Leclerc, I think that would probably be the one that I recommend. If there's a better closer out there, if you're able to find Abner Uribe or somebody like that, then I mean, I don't expect that you're still going to find him out there, but 68% rostered, you just might. Those are guys that I'd be looking at well above these Rangers guys. They're not people that I'd be prioritizing just because I don't want to get myself any more headaches in regards to the bullpen. It's already enough of a headache. If you lost Leclerc, that sucks, but replacing him with guys who are potentially probably going to be in some form of committee where there's not a clear number one guy, I think it's better to just avoid that altogether if you can. Guys, but that will do it for us. I appreciate everybody checking out the show here. I'm doing more of these on Saturday as opposed to Friday, just so I can talk about the whole Friday slate. There wasn't much to talk about in terms of Thursday's games, so I think it did make sense here to just push it forward. to Saturday. And that's something I've been doing a lot more regularly. But make sure you subscribe to the show. And if they come out on Friday or Saturday, whenever, you make sure you get them. And, of course, the rest of the week as well. We go 5 days a week here. So make sure you guys are subscribing. Hopefully leaving a rating and review. That does help the show to grow, reach more people. And that is obviously very, very much appreciated. And, of course, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything of that nature, reach out to me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99. Guys, that will do it. We'll be back on Monday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. But until then, take care. We'll see you then.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.